Are you ready to take your intermittent fasting lifestyle to the next level? There's nothing better than community to help with that. In the Delay, Don't Deny community, we all embrace the clean fast, and there's just the right support for you as you live your intermittent fasting lifestyle. You can connect directly with me in the Ask Jen group, and I'll answer all of your questions personally. If you're new to intermittent fasting or recommitting to the intermittent fasting lifestyle, join the 28-Day Fast Start group. After your fast start, join us for support in the first year group. Need tips for long-term maintenance? We have a place for that. There are many more useful spaces beyond these, and you can interact in as many as you like. Visit jenstevens.com/community to join us. An annual membership costs just over $1 a week when you do the math. If you aren't ready to fully commit for a year, join for a month, and you can cancel at any time. If you know you'll want to stay forever, we also have a lifetime membership option available. IF is free. You don't need to join our community to fast. But if you're looking for support from a community of like-minded intermittent fasters, we're here for you at jenstevens.com/community. That's jenstevens.com/community. If you've been listening to my podcast for a while, you know what a fan I am of Dr. Tim Spector and the work he's doing with Zoe. I was first introduced to his work in 2015, and I've been following his research ever since. What I love most about the Zoe Science and Nutrition podcast is that they have weekly interviews with world-leading experts who explain how their latest research can benefit your health. Recently, I was thrilled to finally meet him face-to-face as we recorded an episode for the Zoe Science and Nutrition podcast, and this episode aired on April 11th. We had a chance to talk about the world's biggest intermittent fasting study, and I had the opportunity to explain the clean fast to Jonathan, which may explain why he didn't enjoy his prior experiences with fasting. Search for Zoe Science and Nutrition on your podcast player or on YouTube to hear the latest episode, and don't forget to look for the April 11th episode to hear me, Tim, and Jonathan talk about the world's biggest intermittent fasting study. Welcome to Intermittent Fasting Stories. I'm your host, Jen Stevens, author of the New York Times bestseller, Fast, Feast, Repeat, as well as the book that started it all, Delay, Don't Deny. I lost over 80 pounds thanks to intermittent fasting after learning how to delay my eating rather than denying myself the delicious foods I want to eat. Now, who's ready to hear an inspirational intermittent fasting story? That's why we're here. So let's get excited to talk to today's guest. Hi, everybody. Welcome to episode 402 of Intermittent Fasting Stories. Today, I'm here with Anne Chalice. Anne lives in Germany, and she is an actress. Welcome, Anne.
Hi, Jim. So good to see you.
It is great to see you as well. You know, I like to start by asking, what brought you to intermittent fasting, and when was that?
So to the actual intermittent fasting, I got in 2021.
Okay.
And that was after I had this mystery disease that nobody could tell me what it was in December 2020. I went to bed and I felt like I had like water retention. And I very often have that. Like, you know, I was like, before intermittent fasting, I very often had water retention in my legs.
Oh,
and
okay.
As a teenager, like when we were like on the bus for 3 days, my jeans burst because my water retention was so bad.
Oh my goodness. So your body would just retain fluid just
like a lot. I always like a right place as well. So I sit on the floor because I know that, you know, like I get like heavy legs. Mm-hmm. So but that's a lot better since intermittent fasting. But so I went to bed and I thought like, oh, this feels like, you know, I have it again. And sometimes I have that before my period as well. So I wasn't that concerned. And I also had a throat infection where I was advised to take ibuprofen. Like, but a very strong, and I never take any medication, never, because I don't have pain or anything. So, and when I have a headache, I just drink some water and hope that it goes away. So I took that against the throat infection. Then I had water retention. That was the night of my niece's birthday, by the way. And I went home after she was born. I went home and I woke up in the morning, which was odd because I normally go to the loo like 4 times at night, and I didn't wake up. I didn't have to go. Woke up in the morning, went to the bathroom and couldn't recognize myself.
Oh, wow.
And I had like literally, I don't know, I don't have a balance, like
a
scale. Mm-hmm. But I think it was like 10 liters of water.
My goodness.
I looked like I couldn't have acted in any way. Like I wouldn't have been cast as the person that I auditioned for because I looked completely different. It was like, if you feed your child McDonald's every day, she's going to look like that in 10 years overnight. It was wow. Like I couldn't bend my arms. My skin was so tight. Like the whole body was like, we have this.
It was like you were inflated with that excess fluid. Yeah,
completely. So I was like, oh, my God. And my boyfriend saw this, and his nephew has a kidney disorder. And he said, like, you need to go, you know, see, like, go now. And you can't get in Germany. It's like, it takes a month until you go to a specialist. Like, you don't, and if you're not privately insured, which I'm not. But I went to some, like, you could go like online and see where you could potentially get, you know, like fitted in an emergency. So I went there, and as I asked this emergency, and I really, you know, I don't know what's going on. I showed them the picture of how I normally look, because they always think, because I'm still slim,
right?
When I am like 10 liters more, but you know, you could tell if something was wrong, and they checked everything, and all the numbers were fine. So I said, yeah, but this is not fine. This is like, I can't work at this. I found like, this is not really. And we have to do something about it. And they said, like, well, take maybe drink nettle tea or whatever. And they said, this is not this. I can't. I really looked like, if you would have seen photos, you would have been shocked. It really, if you can look up the nephrotic syndrome with kids, you can look that up. And I looked like that.
Wow.
You see that this is really wrong. But, and I listened to so many of your episodes, the numbers were fine. So all the doctors, I went to the urologist, endoscopy, doing like, I did everything. I was like 10 days with all the doctors and in the university clinics, and they all said, well, maybe it's because you're reaching middle age.
Oh, gosh. See?
And they said, this is not like, this is, I can't work. I can't even move my face. I can't speak properly because this is so everything. Like, you can't talk. Like, as an actress, you have to be able to talk and to move. I couldn't, everything was just, I was like really inflated. And it's so, I was so desperate because it's all like, what am I going to do? Nobody said, nobody can help me. Nobody can find anything wrong. But this is, only when I showed the picture, they said, like, yeah, that's really, is a big difference.
But that's just, I know that's got to be super frustrating because your body was sending a very clear signal. We do not retain 10 liters of fluid overnight or quickly if there's not something wrong. You know, it makes me think, my dad was in the hospital at the end of the summer of 2023, and he actually released 40 pounds of fluid in like 2 days. I mean, like literally 40 pounds of fluid his body had been holding on to, and he's got kidney issues and all of that. But it's definitely not normal or good. It can lead to like congestive heart failure. Your organs can't work properly. Wow.
And I could have done my job anymore.
Right.
You know, this is all I do. I don't do anything else. I'm an actress. That's all. So I felt horrible. And also, I have a history of eating disorders when I was a teenager. Like I wasn't diagnosed with it because I didn't reach out to anybody, but I didn't eat. And I was like really like, you know, super afraid of food. And then I ate again, because my body would just, you know, tell me, you know, like, well, I couldn't go against the hunger anymore. Right. So I was then at a normal weight. Then I went to America with 17. And I was, when I was always scared of getting chubby, because my mom and like the whole family has this fear of getting chubby, and they all are chubby, like not over, like heavily overweight, but chubby. And she would tell me when I was a little girl that I was just supposed to be chubby, and I was a chubby toddler.
That is really an example of how what we say to kids can set them up for struggle. If you say, oh, you're going to be chubby like me, then you've planted that seed, and then the kid's like, I don't know what to do.
Yeah, and she said, like, she told me basically, like, well, your sister is supposed to be, you know, like, sportive, but you're not sportive, and you're just like me, and you, you know, can't do anything. So I thought my body has to be, like I can't ever eat to satiety, because if I do, and my body's supposed to be chubby, then, so I always have to be a bit hungry. I always have to restrict to, you know, like, so I was at another weight, but I was always watching my weight and super scared that if I were to America, everybody said, like, oh, if you go to America, you gain like 20 pounds. Everybody does. It's just, you know, the way they eat. And I was like, no, 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 this can't happen. And then I read a health magazine when I was there, and it was, they wrote about bulimia. Oh. And I'd never heard of that before. And I thought it's like horrible. And I went back home and my parents got divorced and I tried it. I tried because I thought that would be like, just imagine you could eat to satiety and still not get fat. And I thought it was disgusting, but also it was like, if you are always hungry and have been since like you were 13, it was like, you know, just the option of eating and not getting fat was like, maybe I should try it. I tried and I felt like really embarrassed. But it's like a brain way of like alcoholism or anything.
Right.
You can make it a habit. Mm-hmm. And it didn't really work, but I tried again, even though I was super embarrassed. And then I was bulimic then, but in secret, I didn't reach out to anybody either. For a couple of years on and off, because I was always like so embarrassed that I stopped, and I have like strong will. I'm very tired. But then it's a habit that you can fall into when the fear comes back, because that's like your, you know, your go-to thing. Like, and so many stories that I heard on your podcast, I thought, like, you know, you always, so many people say, like, well, that's just people who are overweight or have a history of diets and of diet brain, but it's totally different than eating disorders. And it's not. It's like, right. I know that because I've been sick all my life, but the whole fear around food and body image is the same. It's the same for like, and my younger sister, and I feel so guilty about it because she's 6 years younger and she got all my, you know, when, oh, we just have to lose weight and she got that when she was 10, because I was telling her, let's do this diet. And, you know, like, that's, so she's heavily overweight now and she wouldn't do that intermittent fasting. And I so want her to.
Well, I want to back up to one thing, and I want you to lose that guilt right now. Lose the guilt, because, you know, I think that this is why I love doing this podcast so much, is that we all have similar internal struggles, whether you're someone like you and you like white knuckled your maintenance for all those years because you had it planted in your head at a very early age by a very well-meaning mother who loved you and just wanted to prevent you from struggling. You're going to have to be vigilant or you will gain weight. So you internalized that and you thought, all righty then, I can do this. And how sad is it that an article on bulimia taught you bulimia, right?
Yes. And it's in a health magazine. And it was like really, that's why one has to be so careful about how you tell the story. Because I was like you, I would see a story about someone like losing weight or even struggling with an eating disorder and wanting to find out how they lost the weight.
Right.
Even when I was skinny already,
Right.
Because I always thought, like, you have to, well, you have to watch this. This could come overnight. It could all of a sudden be, you know, like, overweight. And when this story happened, I hadn't been bulimic or anything for decades. But when I woke up 10 kilos, like, I don't know how many kilos because I don't have a scale.
Right.
But it was like this nightmare that I had as a teenager that you would wake up and you done all the restricting and your body just betrays because it's disposed to be chubby.
Oh my goodness.
So all those old fears were like, you know, like they were back. And I was like, okay, this is not my new normal. Because all of them said, well, you know, your numbers are good. You're so healthy. Because I live a very healthy life. I hardly ever drink alcohol because I need to, you know, I need my body, I need my concentration, need to be all there. And I eat very healthy whole food, like all, like for decades, but also I like it. I'm a vegan, I'm very, like I love animals, I can't eat them. And I don't eat processed foods, like I don't, like my boyfriend loved it, he's English. But I'm not, and so all my numbers were fine, but you could see when you saw me that I'm not fine. And I was like, I'm not accepting this as my new normal. I don't know how, but I'm not going to accept that. And I only drank fluids during that time when nobody could help me because I thought I'm not going to gain, like none of my, like I had baggy pants and they wouldn't, like they were tight.
Right.
Like nothing, I wasn't into, you know, like my PJs, like I love PJs, like as a point. And like those flannel PJs, right. I love them. They
cozy.
Were tight. They were
wow.
tight. And my boyfriend, he's like so lovely. He's like, you're still beautiful. I know that you don't feel fine, but you, and it's like, I look like a frog, like a bullfrog. I really did. And he said, yeah, but bullfrogs had me, you know, like pretty. And I was like,
bless him.
Yeah,
that's
he was
so sweet.
And it was.
We all face stress in our daily lives. What if the answer to a better stress response is in one key nutrient? I'm talking about magnesium, and specifically Magnesium Breakthrough by Optimizers. This one-of-a-kind product is designed to reverse low levels of magnesium, which could have a positive effect on our stress response. But don't take my word for it. Here's a quote from a 2020 issue of the scientific journal Nutrients. Results suggest that stress could increase magnesium loss, causing a deficiency. And in turn, magnesium deficiency could enhance the body's susceptibility to stress, resulting in a magnesium and stress vicious circle. I only recommend Magnesium Breakthrough by Optimizers. It's the only organic full-spectrum magnesium supplement that includes 7 unique forms of magnesium for stress resilience and better sleep. Simply go to bioptimizers.com/ifstories, promo code ifstories10 to get your Magnesium Breakthrough and find out this month's gift with purchase. That's bioptimizers.com/ifstories, promo code ifstories10. Green Chef is the number one meal kit for clean eating, delivering pre-portioned and prepped quality whole foods with limited processed ingredients. Green Chef sends organic, fresh produce, responsibly sourced proteins, and chef-designed recipes in every box for satisfying, nourishing, and convenient meals that fit in beautifully to my cleanish lifestyle, and the food is totally window-worthy. Tonight, we're having barbecue sweet potato tacos with cabbage and carrot slaw, black beans, corn, and cheesy tortillas, and they come with Green Chef's chimichurri sauce. So good. Go to greenchef.com/ifstories50 and use the promo code ifstories50 to get 50% off plus 20% off your next 2 months. That's greenchef.com/ifstories50. And don't forget to use the promo code ifstories50 to get 50% off plus 20% off your next 2 months.
And then I went to the endoscopy. It was like the 9th day of the thing. Nobody found anything. And he said, fine, there's nothing there. So I went to the university the next day again and said, so I don't know, to the nephrologist. And they took my blood. They always have to take your blood all the time. Whenever you go to, even though you go there every day, they have to take your blood. And they said, you're very low on potassium. Because of the endoscopy, you have to empty the whole digestive tract to do the and a zombie. So they gave me potassium, and all of a sudden I could pee.
Oh, yay.
And I was like, well, so what's happening? I can't pee, like, after 10 days. And they said, maybe we'll just give you another one of, and you have to be so bad with potassium. But I didn't care. I just thought, like, okay, this is going to get me
that
better.
Fluid out. Yeah.
And I got, like, went to the pharmacies. I got, like, potassium tablets that you can put into water. They taste like lemonade. And I peed for 2 days. It was all gone.
Wow.
It was back in my body. But I hadn't been low on potassium before, so that wasn't the reason. That was just like after 10 days of endoscopy. So then I went to the nephrologist and I was back to normal. And he said, like, well, we can only guess what it was. And he said it might have been something like the nephrotic syndrome, which only toddlers get. And so nobody checked me on the toddler's disease because only toddlers get it.
Right.
And he was the only one who said, like, I think that might have been it. But now I'm like, because ibuprofen is also bad for your kidneys. It's really bad for your kidneys. And it could have triggered something as well. And then, because I'm in 2003, I had a massive epileptic seizure.
Okay.
So ever since then, they said I'm light sensitive epileptic or something, but I refuse to take medication because the medication can mean that you lose your ability to concentrate.
Right.
And also it could have made me infertile. It was like 10 years ago where I still could. When was that?
Yeah, 2003 is like 20 years ago.
Years ago.
I know. That isn't that bizarre to think about how long ago that is.
Oh, God. So I didn't take medication. And I, like, when I have dizzy spells, but normally I get through them somehow. And then, like, 10 years ago, it was so bad that I couldn't go out with my dog because it was like afraid that I might, you know, get a seizure. And I am very lucky. Like, I only had like 2 really bad seizures in my life. I had been cast as a lead actress in a feature film in England.
Uh-huh.
In an independent feature film. I only do theater normally, like for over 20 years only. So I was like, yeah, I'm doing this. I'm not going to be paid for it, but I don't care. I wanted, you know, have that experience to be the lead in a film and see how that is, because I love the stage, and I was never really interested in film because if you only cast for a day, it's like, I'm not proud of what I did because it was cast for how I look and how I sound, so it's not
right.
Acting. So I went there and I thought, like, oh God, what am I gonna do about the food, because it can't have like MSG, like my whole body retains prison. I'm not going to have that. So I went very strict on the ketogenic diet, which was actually invented by epileptic kids.
Right.
And so I thought, like, okay, I'll pull that through so I won't have dizzy spells. And I didn't. I was fine. I didn't have dizzy spells. It was, you know, I couldn't eat with the rest of the crew, but I had like avocados, lots of those, Brazil nuts, I love them.
So you were doing keto as a vegan?
As a vegan, yeah, but whole food keto. So I was like coconut oil, avocados, soy yogurt, plain soy yogurt and all the thing. And it worked fine for about a year until I got the mystery disease. So then, and that nephrotic doctor, nephrologist, then who's like, you're a doctor, the one who did the Benjamin Fassett that you read before you wrote all your books. How is he called?
Right.
And he's a nephrologist as well, isn't he? Yeah,
Yes.
And he said, actually, your numbers are good, but they are, like, you have slightly raised liver. And you have a bit of protein in your urine. And like normally, all my levels were always like over the top, really, really good. And I was like, okay, liver, that's, you know, I never drink yogurt. The bottle, that's like, okay, how could that happen? And then I thought that's a ketogenic diet because I always, the fat, like really was hard for me to digest, and I always felt that that's like my body is like saying, like, well, this is really not like that. But I thought like, well, but we are epileptic and I have to do something, so you know, you get used to it. And I think maybe my body had rebelled against.
And, you know, I'm thinking of something, you know, of course, I'm not a doctor, but I've been around the intermittent fasting world and the health world, just anecdotally, what people talk about and listening to doctors. One thing about a ketogenic diet is that it can lead to electrolyte imbalances, right? Like minerals, like potassium and magnesium, all the different minerals that are electrolytes. And so I'm wondering if that is what was happening, if your ketogenic diet led you to have an electrolyte imbalance, and then that led to, you know, all the fluid retention, because that, and you know, the fact that the potassium cleared out that fluid makes me wonder. That's why so many people take electrolytes, you know, because fasting can also lead to electrolyte imbalance if you're drinking a whole lot of water while you're fasting. But really, if you're keto, That's where all these electrolyte supplements came from, is the keto community, because they recognized that they had problems with mineral balance, and so they needed them.
Yeah, I don't know. He said it could also be because I had this throat. And he said sometimes that's a reaction, but also only like mostly kids. Like, I don't
know. You had the toddler disease, Anne. Yes. Anne had toddler nephrotic
syndrome. So it could be also that it's a reaction of my body to this throat thing. I don't know. I hope it's never going to come. I'm so scared that it's ever going to because nobody knows what it was. So I'm just... So, but then...
Right.
Now, to get back to how it got to the time. So I started listening to all those health podcasts because I thought, like, okay, I'll do that, everything even better. You know, I won't do the keto anymore, but I don't want to take the epileptic medication. So what can I do to prevent seizures from happening, still be super healthy,
right,
but not do keto? You know, what can I do? So I was like, okay, I'll tell myself, because nobody, they always say, take those pills. You know, I don't.
Right.
Those are not free meals. Like, they are not.
Yeah.
So, and I started listening to this podcast called Peter Better Live More by Dr. Brandon Chatterjee. He's an English doctor.
Okay.
And he had this episode. Maybe it's not what you eat, it's when you eat. And it was Dr. Sachin Panda, I think is his name.
Sachin Panda, yep, on Dr. Chatterjee, yep.
And he said he had all those rat things you probably heard of. So, and I thought, like,
oh, yeah.
That's interesting. Because it makes, and he had this thing about if you want to repair a railway and you don't stop the trains from coming through while you're repairing it, it's going to be very hard to repair those railway things. So if you stop the trains for the time you want to repair it, it's a lot easier.
That is a brilliant analogy. I've not heard that one. So I'm going to say it again. That is so smart. If the railway track needs to be repaired, you cannot repair the track while the train is running on it. And so that is a great analogy for fasting. Our body has repair to do. And if we're constantly digesting all the time, it's like the train never gets off the track.
Yeah, even if you just repair and the train goes over, it could just damage it again. You know, it needs time to be repaired. And I thought, that makes sense. So, and then I started to read. Then I thought, okay, that's an interesting topic. So I Googled like intermittent fasting, time restricted feeding, and somehow I found you.
Yeah,
and yes, yeah, I read the Fast Peace Repeat wasn't out yet because then it was 2021. But you
it did come out. Fast Feast Repeat came out in 2020, but you might just have found Delay Don't Deny first.
No, Fast Feast Repeat was out. That's true. No, it was out already. Your Cleanish wasn't out here.
Right,
I listened to Fast Peace Repeat, then I listened to the, what's his name? again, the nephrologist that you always...
Jason Fung.
Yes.
But did you listen to the obesity code?
The most keto thingy. And I'm all like...
Right.
Yeah. But, and the intermittent fasting does the same thing that the ketogenic diet was supposed to do for epileptic kids, because the ketosis helps prevent the brain from doing the seizures.
Right.
So, and you can get that by intermittent fasting as well. And so I started, and but what it did, what the magic was about it, why I wanted to tell my story was I wasn't in a deep eating disorder anymore, and I haven't been for years, but I was always watching my food, and I was still afraid of like overeating. Because I still didn't trust my body fully, and because of the mystery disease, I was back into the old fear of God. What? Why does this body do this to me? And the intermittent fasting freed me completely of the food fear, and that's why I thought. Because everybody says it's not for nobody who has an eating disorder should do intermittent fasting, and I disagree. Because I think if in my living years, if I would have found this, because a lot of people are not bulimic because they can't help it. I think it's like they don't get out of the bulimia because they are scared that they're going to gain weight.
Right.
The fear, like, you hate to be sick. You hate to have that eating disorder. You think nobody should ever know that because you're so disgusting and you have to leave the planet if anybody finds out. But the fear of gaining weight is as big or bigger. So you stay in the eating disorder because you're so scared. Because a lot of people get into the eating disorder because they're so scared of getting overweight or being overweight or staying overweight, whatever. So that if you have a healing option where you don't, because you think as a disordered eater, if they cure me, I'll be fat.
Right.
I'll be healthy, but yeah, fat. And I would have to live in a fat, you know, like in a big body for the rest of my life and be happy with it. And I don't know if I can ever be happy in a big body. So you are scared of that. You think they will force you to live in a big body for the rest of your life if you want to be healthy. Because a lot of people will think like me, I'm disposed to be overweight or big or whatever. A lot of people who are, you know, in an eating disorder. So I think the intermittent fasting didn't make me lose any weight because my body was happy where it was, but it helped me get a healthy feeling for an appetite correct. And I also started having,
right,
because of your recommendation, I listened to that. And it helps you trust your body again and trust that you can eat so, like, you can. I frequently overeat, but not in a way where I think, never go on, now I have to part of it. But, like, I'm so stuffed saying, like, oh God, I don't want to move anymore. Like, my dog needs to walk it, man. Like, so because I'm not afraid of it anymore.
Well, let's go back and let's explore that a little bit. I really want to go down this path with you and talk about the whole concept of, can someone who has a history of eating disorders successfully use intermittent fasting? Can they and should they? And so the typical disclaimer is, if you have a history of an eating disorder, do not do intermittent fasting unless you're working with a counselor and the counselor can work with you and make sure you're not triggering old eating disorder behaviors. That being said, you never worked with a counselor even before, did you? You did not have a counselor, but you recognized.
I was too scared. I was too embarrassed.
I get it. And that's so interesting what you said. And I never thought about it like that before, but I bet there are so many people with undiagnosed eating disorders, just like you were, who do not seek treatment because same reason. Because you're so afraid they will successfully treat your eating disorder and then you will gain weight. And so you're like, well, I just have to keep it a secret because this is the only way I can control my weight.
Because I can't trust my body to be healthy in a not overweight body, because you think that your body will, if you are satiated, if you eat to satiety, right, you will be fat.
And so we're so scared of eating to satiety that it feels wrong. And you trained yourself at a very early age that eating until you're satisfied is bad, wrong, and will make you overweight. So one thing that I think is important, Anne, you never became underweight in an unhealthy way. Is that correct? Like all throughout your struggles with your eating disorder, you maintained a healthy weight, but you had the disordered eating to keep you at that weight. Would that be fair to say?
Well, I think during the bulimia, when I was actually throwing up, I was heavier than I'm now.
Yeah.
So,
but you never got to a low underweight, unhealthy
weight.
Well,
I'm very low
slim.
Weight anyway.
Yeah.
Like I'm very slim. Like I have like you know like I have, like I don't know.
I can see everybody. Anne is a nice, slim weight, but she does not look underweight. Like you, I would not look at you and think Anne is underweight. You look like a very healthy weight.
Yeah, and I'm like I'm a very low weight. I think from the, but I always look bigger. Like I always are. Like wow, I didn't think that you were that light, but that's just the way I am. And I mean like intermittent fasting. If you do like. Sometimes I do it for 12 hours, sometimes I do it for 16, sometimes I do it for 18 because I don't get to eat before. And I didn't lose anything because my body is happy where it is, but I can, you know, like eat without feast without fear.
I love that. Yeah, I love that. You can feast without fear.
And I think a lot of people, and that's why I actually reach out to Jay so long that they never get back to me because they probably have... The fear that people, that I think a lot of people criticize people who say that intermittent fasting is healthy, that's promoting an eating disorder because in the whole group of people who want to recover from eating disorders, they shun that they really like and people get attacked. I don't know. Gwyneth Paltrow wrote some book with this, and it's called
Intuitive Fasting. Was that the
yes.
one? Yes. Yeah.
And I used to swear for it because she's slim anyway, and they say she's like anorexic and all, I don't know, and they hate her. Like they get so hateful, and they say you have to eat. Every few hours, and you know, and this whole eating, like, there's this one way to recover from an eating disorder. And if you say, well, there actually might be another way, and I've suffered from it, so I know that it helped me. You know, it helped me to finally find the freedom to let my body, you know, like really be satiated without fear.
And I think this is really important, Anne, is,
you
know, I talk all the time about learning to listen to our body. And I think this is one example of that. From your early days through all of your struggles with your what felt like disordered eating to you, and I'm certain that it was, even though it was never officially diagnosed, you did not feel mentally well, emotionally well. You knew that that was not right. It didn't feel right. Would you say that's
true? It wasn't right. It was like,
right.
It was. Definitely, I threw up, like not when I was like anorexic, when I was like, then I was like just not eating, you know, like, and that was in my growing years. That was like from 13 until 17, I just ate as little as possible. That, but then with 17, my body just said like, well, we're hungry and we're gonna eat now. And then I would eat like a whole jar of honey or whatever.
But you knew that didn't feel good and you had shame associated with it.
Yeah.
So much shame that you didn't talk about it or tell anybody about it for fear they would treat you into being overweight.
Yeah.
But in contrast, now you have a calmness and a freedom and it does not feel disordered. Like I look back on my whole diet history in the way I would, you know, I was not ever diagnosed with an eating disorder. I was never anorexic or bulimic, but the way that I approached eating felt very disordered because I was always thinking about food and wanting to eat and couldn't eat and eating the
wrong. That's exactly the same mindset. That's why when I listened to your episode, that's exactly the same. Just you didn't throw up.
Right. But it felt like an obsession, right? It felt like an obsession, and the food noise was always there. And again, probably same as you. I tried the restrictive diets. My body always commanded me to eat more. So I actually became obese because of all the food noise. And intermittent fasting turned that off for me.
Yeah.
It turned it off. So I totally get it. So for someone like you or someone like me who had what very much felt disordered for years and years and years, we can trust that this does not feel disordered. Now, the reason people need to be cautious if they've ever had a diagnosed eating disorder is because fasting is a tool that can be misused if someone is anorexic or if someone has an eating disorder. But just because fasting is a tool that can be misused doesn't mean fasting is an eating disorder. So I think that's the key. The way you feel emotionally, if you feel free and finally lose your food fear.
Yeah. It was like a myth. Like, I never thought that I could, like, of course, sometimes I like, you know, to society, but then I felt like, oh God, I hope that my body doesn't, you know, like, turn on me and, you know, and, you know, like, I saw a series on Netflix the other day where it's called Hacks, and an old comedian says to a young girl, "Oh, don't haven't you ever heard of that saying, a second on your fork, a lifetime on your hips?"
Oh, yeah.
Or something like that. And it's like that fear was in me, like my whole, like my mom or her sister, they are always on, like, to my sister, my aunt, she doesn't know how much that hurts. And I know, I was a chubby kid, I know that that hurts. And it hurts my sister, but she pretends that it doesn't hurt anymore. So my aunt says hi, and she goes like, "Hi, Anne." And then she goes, "Hi, Charlotte," as a joke, you know.
Aw, like, there's little things like that. And the audience can't see, but Anne acted out like, "Hello, Anne," with like a nice little hug. And then when she says hi to Charlotte, it was a big wide hug. And those little subtle things, we internalize those. And
I that, and it can make me cry because I know she's got hurt for weeks now. My sister's got hurt for weeks. Because I was like that. I was like hurt when, and on stage, you know, if you are a bigger actress, I wasn't, like, because I was always... So when I started acting, I was already slim, but I know how that feels as a teenager or whatever. And just the fear, even if you're skinny, just the fear of someone saying, you know, like, it's just, you are so sensitive about your body I think men are as well, but not as much as women.
Well, you know, you say that. I remember the exact where I was standing at my mother's dance studio when I came home from college. It was Christmas break. I think it was either Christmas break or summer break. I can't remember which it was, but I was home from college and had put on weight at college. And I remember I'm standing exactly where I was standing in my mother's dance studio. And someone said, "You've really put on a lot of weight at college, didn't you?" And I remember how much that hurt. And I was like, "What? What?" And it hurt to hear it.
Yes. It's like, I think it's as damaging as commenting on growing breasts. Like, growing, that's like, I mean, it can feel like, wow, you know, and, you know, it can be a source of pride, but it can also be like, this is so, you know, like, just getting, like, growing into your body that is hormonally changing, you know, like, at least in the menopause.
Right.
Like, I'm entering it soon. And it's,
You know what? I remember when it was. It was summer. I had come home for summer because the reason I remember is that is when I started my first diet, right after that comment.
Yeah,
I made that connection.
Yes.
Right after that, I said, well, gotta do something about that. That was when I started my first diet, and it was calorie counting.
And it's bit, so you wouldn't be as vulnerable. That's It's like it is. And so I feel like I want to give you a vote to my sister so badly. I actually sent it to her and she said, "Thank you. I told you that, right?"
Right.
I told you that. She hasn't read it, and I'm not going to tell her again. She's so, like, she really is so overweight that she is like obese, and she has two kids. She's so beautiful, but she is it really weighs on her soul. And I feel like I have the miracle here right here.
I get it.
Know your story, because she's done so many diets, and I think she wouldn't be obese if it wasn't for me as her bigger sister, who was like obsessed with, oh, let's do this, and you know, like drink.
Well, I want you to lose that guilt right there, because you both had the same messages as a child. And you internalized them one way and she has internalized them another way. It is not your fault. So stop feeling that guilt. That's what I want you to
listen.
I want you to stop feeling guilty because it is not your fault. You both got the message, you're in a body that's going to be overweight. And so the way you interpreted that when you were young was, well, I better fight that with everything I've got. And that led you down disordered eating. Whereas perhaps she heard it as, well, it doesn't matter what I do, then
no,
does
she
it?
She fought it as well.
And she fought it for a while.
That's why I think if she reads your story, because she did the same thing and she's super intelligent. She's just like you. She's like so smart. And she got everything, like, you know, like everything she wanted to on the kids, she wanted to marry, she wanted a house, she's got all of that.
Right.
And she what she wants, she said her mind, so she gets it. But this is the only thing. And she did Atkins. She lost like 25 kilos, I don't know, like in 3 months with Atkins.
Wow.
And I was staring at her. I cooked all the meat for her because we were living together. But then she found out that life isn't perfect just because you lost the weight.
Right.
And that shocked her. And also that the man looked differently at her and she felt hurt by all of a sudden being seen when before she felt just as worthy and she wasn't. And it's like, and then she gained all the weight back when she said like she doesn't want to eat meat anymore because she felt like a pet cemetery.
Right. I know. There's so many things in our heads and stories we tell us. But now I understand what you're saying about her. She's tried and now she's just like, forget it. Would you say that's true? She's like, I'm tired of doing
all that. Because all the doctors say what was so wrong. Like they say, like, you should eat less and move more. And I thought this she did that all her life. And look how, like, where it got her. She's at her happiest and unhappy about it, but she thinks I can't do anything about it.
Right.
There's nothing I can do. She went to an eating, like, disordered eating group for people who, but she isn't disordered eating. She doesn't overeat. She eats less
than
I. Was
it Overeaters Anonymous? Did she go to Overeaters Anonymous? Does that sound right?
No, it's not even anonymous. It was just like, but they don't know their stuff. And if you hear it, and I just so want to help her, but I'm just keeping it among chapter and hope that it will get to her. Like the book, she has the book as an audio.
She'll be ready if and when she's ready. And that is the hardest part about knowing that we have what could be her answer. And
your story is like her story.
It sounds like it. And you know, when I got to the point that I gave up because I was so weary of trying so hard and feeling like a failure, that's when I gave up and became really obese because I was like, forget it. I can't do it. I'm just going to be obese. Thank goodness I tried one more time. I'm so grateful for that. But
graduation is a sweet occasion, but finding the perfect gift can be a bitter struggle. MMS.com has a solution. Personalized M&Ms. Just imagine the look on your grad's face when they receive a custom candy creation featuring their school's colors, name, and even their photo printed right on some M&Ms. It's a thoughtful way to celebrate their accomplishments and make the occasion even more special. Visit MMS.com to create your own personalized gifts and party favors for graduations, weddings, birthdays, and more. That's MMS.com. Use code WONDERY to receive 15% off your next order.
This podcast is supported by FedEx. FedEx offers fast delivery, more visibility, simple returns, and weekend home delivery to 98% of the U.S. population on Saturday and 50% on Sunday. With FedEx, you get picture proof of delivery, ensuring you always know where your package is. Returns are simple with packageless and paperless returns. Plus, FedEx Ground is also faster to more locations than UPS Ground. See the FedEx service guide for delivery information. So, what are you waiting for? See what FedEx can do for your business. Absolutely, positively, FedEx.
You know, I totally get it. And she's in that place right now of, I don't want to hear it probably. And so she just wants to live her life without the struggle. The longer we struggle, sometimes we just are like, I'm tired of fighting that battle because it's a losing battle anyway.
Yeah. But she wants to, for her kids, she wants to be healthy. And she is worried that she's not going to live long if she, you know, keeps on that path. And I mean, she's not like, you know, obese people and like those obese people that you sometimes see in America, they are much more than she is, you know. But she is, I think, medically like really obese. And she, you know, she had like diabetes too during her pregnancy. But even some people get that. I thought it was normal. And she started crying. And she felt so embarrassed because she felt so embarrassed for having diabetes when she's heavy. And she, you know, and then those are the moments where I know how much she hurt. And she's like a, outwardly, she's such a strong person that she doesn't show her vulnerability. But she, and then all of a sudden it cracks open and she's like, desperate. And
I totally get it. It's hard. It is hard to be overweight and feel like you can't do anything about it. And so even when you give up, like I remember that whole period of time when I gave up and just kept gaining weight and got to my heaviest. And I was like, all right, I give up. I'm not going to do it. That's going to be freedom. I'm just going to live my life. I still felt terrible inside every minute. You couldn't stop thinking about it. So that felt disordered as well.
Yeah.
So thank goodness for the freedom of intermittent fasting. And I hope one day she is emotionally healed enough to hear that intermittent fasting might be a solution.
Yeah.
But it's not your fault. I want to keep reiterating that. It's toxic diet culture is what it is.
Yeah.
And, you know, I was just at a conference with a bunch of health and wellness professionals where we have to like refine our mission statement and what we're doing and what is our true north. What are we doing in the world? And, you know, the more I've been thinking about it, it's really morphed into helping people recognize how we have been so misled and influenced by toxic diet culture. And your story goes back, and you and your sister both heard those messages, not just from one another, not just from your mother, but from society as a whole.
Yeah.
And unlearning all of that and leaning into trusting our bodies and knowing what feels good and what doesn't.
Yeah, and I think that goes back that story that you need to be, you know, like a princess is always slim, right?
Yeah.
You know, you want to be a princess, but they are all slim. Even my grandmother, like she, you know, those stories, when you read them, the stories that they read as young kids,
yeah, they the princess all, is always slim, all, wearing the beautiful dress.
Yeah. You know, it's like,
and the wicked stepmother is, or the little stepsisters are chubby, right? They're not so pretty.
That's right. Now, it's a story that we get them. And on the other hand, there is a truth to like, and body positivity is one thing. But if you like, right now, I have the feeling that if people say that intermittent fasting is a good thing. I don't know. I'm only on Instagram. I don't go to Twitter or anything because I only get nice comments on, you know, like all my feet are positive. Okay.
Right.
But I don't talk about intermittent fasting because I might be attacked because I'm slim already.
Right. People don't understand it. Like they don't understand.
Yeah.
The people who think that intermittent fasting is only about you do it because you want to lose weight. They would not understand the idea of someone who is in a slim, healthy body, why you would do intermittent fasting, but you're doing it for health benefits. And you talked about your approach. You fast between 12 and 18 hours, right? Is that you're not doing tiny little eating windows.
No. Oh, God. Yeah. No. And I like, my body's completely different sometimes. Like 2 days ago, it just like after 12 hours, like, okay, I have to eat. And I ate so much that day because my body just wanted, I just kept cooking.
Yeah. You listened to your body.
Yes.
And that is what's beautiful. You have learned, thanks to intermittent fasting, that you can trust your body.
Yeah.
And giving it a break gives you the food freedom to really hear your hunger and satiety signals. And I love that you now feel free to eat to satiety because we're supposed to. We are supposed to eat until we're satisfied.
And my body loves to eat to satiety.
Right.
So free. And another thing, I gave up all the, I bought so many supplements, you know, like in Germany, you have like the pure supplements. I only know they're from your podcast, but
right.
So they're good supplements, but they are very expensive. And then I listened to an audiobook that I think you would love as well. Let me see. I looked it up because I thought I wanted to mention it. It's called The End of Craving.
The End of Cravings?
The End of Craving, and is called by Mark with a
Schatzlinger or something.
Mark Schatzer.
Yeah, Mark, I've heard of that book. I haven't read it.
It's great, and it's like, and after that, I stopped all the supplements because he said, like, you know, like, and it's like blue zones. I mean, they eat the pasta, they eat the rice and everything. They don't shun the carbs. They're so lovely. I love carbs.
Right, right. And I wonder, is that the same author of The Dorito Effect? Is that the same guy that wrote that?
But he said, you know, like all those artificial sweeteners, and and then they thought, okay, maybe if it's like the more sugary, the red is gonna love you. The
yep,
more
same
sugary.
Guy. That's the same guy. He's the same guy that wrote The Dorito Effect. I thought so. Mark Schatzker or something. I can't see because I'm not remembering.
And at the End of Craving, it's so bad. It's like a novel. Like you read, and I thought it really interesting because I thought, okay, the artificial sweeteners, I know that the brain then gets more hungry. That's how you get pigs fatter, right?
Right.
They feed them, actually, after sweet.
Yeah, he's a great writer. I read The Dorito
it's
Effect.
All good.
And I think that's why I didn't get The End of Cravings, because I read The Dorito Effect and really learned a lot from that. But it's how ultra-processed foods hijack our brains and how those foods are designed in the lab to make us eat more. And the answer is real food.
Yeah, and even like real pasta, you know, less processed food. I mean, pasta is like, but they do it, you know, like, and after that, I wanted to start cooking because I'm not a good cook. Like, but I thought, like, oh, I want to make my own pasta. I just thought, like, you know, that Italian food and everything, you talk so much about Italy. But he said, like, all those B vitamins and whatever, we all are told that we need that because the soil is not the same as it used to be. And actually, the body takes the stuff out of the food if we get the whole food, you know. Even today, even if the soil is not as it was generations ago. And I think that makes total sense. Also, what our ancestors ate, that we, you know, like can process better what our ancestors ate because all of those genes that we we learn something, we know something when we are born because our grandparents learned it by living it, right?
So, you right. Know, I'm fascinated by all of that. And, you know, what it really, at some point, it really like was like an aha moment to me. You know, they studied the Mediterranean diet and all the studies on the Mediterranean diet and well, I'm not going to say all of the studies, that would be wrong, but the early studies, the really profound studies, the ones that are so like PREDIMED, I think is the name of it, the ones that were really impactful, they studied the Mediterranean diet with people who lived in the Mediterranean and had Mediterranean genetics. So all of a sudden, one day I was like, wait a minute.
Yeah,
the Mediterranean diet was studied on Mediterranean people, and they did great. So, I mean, I still think the pattern of the Mediterranean diet with whole foods and real foods and all of that makes perfect sense. But we can't assume that it's going to, you know, apply to people who have, I don't know, Scottish heritage like me.
Yes. That's why I love Zoe. And I'm like, right. I can't do it in Germany. Can't do it. Like, I would like to. But I think I'm like you, because I don't like, maybe because of the pizza and I overdid it, but I can't. I'm not good with fat. Like, right. I like fat, but my body, like, I was visiting my cousin in France 2 weeks ago, and he invited us to a restaurant. It's a struggle too. Like, I'm always embarrassed to say I'm vegan in a French restaurant in the country, because they go like, désolé.
Too bad, right? Too bad.
I'm sorry. We only have meat or fish. Like, it's like really. So I was like, oh, that's fine. I'll go get something at the supermarket. Like,
oh, gosh.
You know, like, I don't want to be a complicated tourist. I hate that. I'm not allowed to use everything. I'm not, you know, I'm vegetarian ever since I traveled.
Well, we are almost out of time. What would you tell someone just starting out with intermittent fasting, or what do you wish you knew when you first started?
I would say read Jen's book or listen to it as an audiobook, and that tells you everything you need to know. Don't be hard on your time, like when you have to fast. Like, I'm not like, you don't have to be rigid on the window when you eat or when you fast. Just try to do like 12 hours without eating so your body can repair, and then see how you feel. And if you want to do more, like my boyfriend is now a fan of intermittent fasting, and he always sees like almost 2 meters tall, and he had bachelor issues and crashed, you know, like mood swings. Ever since intermittent fasting, he's fine.
Oh, I love it.
Just, like, he's very slim, but he had a little tummy and he lost it.
I love that. And I think the moral of the story is, from your story and your boyfriend's story, you do not need to lose weight in order to be an intermittent faster. Intermittent fasting is a healthy way to live for adult bodies, period.
Learn to trust your body. It doesn't try to do anything to you. It supports you, and it will be so happy for you to do it, and you will feel it.
Well, Anne, thank you so much for sharing your story today.
Thank you so much. It was such a joy, Jen. Really.
Do you have an intermittent fasting story to tell? Email me at jen@intermittentfastingstories.com and I'll add you to the lineup. That's GIN@intermittentfastingstories.com. The world wants to hear your story. That's it for today. Remember, I may have a doctorate, but I'm not a medical doctor. So don't use anything you hear on this podcast as a substitute for medical advice. Please always check with your doctor or healthcare provider if you have medical questions. I'll talk to you next week, Fasting Family, where we will hear another inspiring story. Have a great week and fast on. Intermittent Fasting Stories is edited, mixed, and mastered by Resonate Recordings. To learn more, visit them at resonaterecordings.com or email them at hello@resonaterecordings.com. Intermittent Fasting Stories listeners will receive a free offer if you mention that you heard it on the podcast.
I'm Shimol Yai, and I have a new podcast called The Competition. Every year, 50 high school senior girls compete in a massive scholarship competition.
I wouldn't say I have an ego problem, but I'm extremely competitive.
All of the competitors are used to being the best and the brightest, and they're all vying for a huge cash prize.
This will probably be the most intense thing you've ever gone through in your life.
I remember that feeling because I was one of them. I lost. But now I'm coming back as a judge and also a kind of teen girl anthropologist. Because if you want to understand what it's like to be a young woman in America today, the competition's not a bad place to start.
Hopefully no one will die on stage tonight.
From Pineapple Street Studios and Wondery, this is The Competition. Follow The Competition on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen to The Competition early and ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus.
Once upon a beat. Remember those stories and fables that would capture your imagination and you couldn't wait to see how they would unfold? And And now, when you read them as an adult, you think, some of these old tales could use a fresh spin. We have a perfect podcast to bring you the stories you remember, remix, and reimagine for the kids in your life today. Join me, DJ Fuse, and my trusty turntable, Baby Scratch, as we spin up new tales in the New Kids and Family Podcast, Once Upon a Beat. Yeah. Wondry and Tinkercast are bringing you a jam-packed, music-filled weekly party where hip-hop and fables meet. It's Once Upon a Beat. Follow Once Upon a Beat on the Wondry app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen to Once Upon a Beat early and ad-free right now by joining Wondry Plus in the Wondry app or Wondry Kids Plus in Apple Podcasts. Once Upon a Beat.